This is an ABC podcast.
G'day. On the pod today, min-mins, lake air, spiders, splinter pullers, snails, camels, the Gulf of Papua, hot springs, something to savour. And as I said, if you listen to the pod, let us know. Send me an email. Write me a letter. Enjoy. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. It's Daniel here from sitting in the bush in Charlotte Plains Station in western Queensland.
Why? What are you doing there, Daniel?
Oh, well, we're actually moving back to our beautiful hometown of Broome. We've been down in the Wollongong area, and we really prefer the warm weather. So we're on our way back. So, yeah, we're just chasing the bore lines a little bit going up through Queensland. So, as I said, we're in Charlotte Plains. There's a beautiful thermal spring here that we're in. Well, we've been in, and now I've just lit the fire with a bit of cypress pine, so the smell is beautiful and the stars are everywhere. It's quiet. It's amazing.
Oh,
it's
Daniel,
bit of the country, mate.
Yeah, we should be there. Now, listen, who's we?
So I've got my wife, Monica, and our good friends, Jeff and Carol. They flew over from WA to help drive us back with all our gear. And yeah, so caravan and camper trailers. At this particular spot, there's probably about 100 caravans here.
So it's Charlotte Plains is open for tourists
open
and things.
For the public. Yeah.
It's
a beautiful spot.
And there's an arthritis spring there, is there?
Pretty much, mate. Yeah, they got baths set up all over the campsite. So you just turn them on and you got hot water. As much as you want. It's just phenomenal.
Are people travelling there for their bad knees and hips and all that sort of stuff, are they?
I would imagine so. There's quite a lot of retired people here, which is totally fine. But they got a little bar there set up, and
they get a live bar music
during the night. There's a little country band cranking along. So
You'll tell me there's a coffee van there.
Funny enough, they do make coffee.
Listen, what's your story, Daniel? What were you doing at Wollongong, and why?
I was actually in Jamboree. We moved there for we got some friends there, and my son got a job there and stuff. But we didn't really particularly like the weather so much. It was quite cold and rainy. We've been in Broome for quite a while, and so we're basically heading back to Broome. So back to my business. I've got a maintenance business in Broome, and shout out to all my good friends over there.
Daniel's coming. There you go.
I'm coming back. Yeah, I'm coming back. I need to go back fishing again so I can get my bones warm again.
Yeah, well, so you're just taking your time on your trip, are you?
Yes, correct. Yeah, we're probably going to get back in the first week of August. So we're actually heading from here up through to Opalton and Ruby Vale. We'll do a bit of fossicking and a little bit of prospecting, and then back over to the Mataranka Hot Springs in Northern Territory and down to Katherine to the Hot Springs. And yeah.
So what is it with the Kimberley. What is it with the hot springs? You're doing a hot springs trip, are you?
Yeah. We've actually met a couple of people who have done it from Melbourne. They've come up from Melbourne. They follow the bore line, and there's hot springs all the way. There's one in Cunnamulla and one in a bit further up Milton, I think it was, or Winton, whatever it was.
Yeah, they're out.
And you just pick up on them. So it's just one of those little nice things. Yeah, you wouldn't believe it. In the middle of the bush, there's so much water. It's just incredible. It's amazing.
Well, yes,
goats and sheep and everything, and
goats everywhere. Daniel, good luck. Keep in touch. When will you be in Broome?
Thanks, mate. We'll be in Broome in the first week of August.
All right.
And thanks for taking the call, mate. First time caller.
Good on you.
Been listening to you for a while. So
see you in Broome, I hope, Daniel.
Yeah, see you there, mate.
Good on you.
Catch, buddy.
Bye.
See you, mate.
Where are you, Steve?
Yeah, good morning, Ian. I'm in Papua Gulf in Papua New Guinea. I'm on a small offshore marine terminal up here.
What's the Gulf's name? What's the name of...
In Papua New Guinea, the Gulf of Papua on the southern side of Papua New Guinea between Papua New Guinea and the Cape York.
So it's called the Papua Gulf, right? Sorry.
Papuan Gulf, yeah.
Uh-huh. What are you doing there, Stevie?
Yeah, I'm the offshore installation manager up here, Ian, so I've been here now about 8.5 years, and I'm retiring tomorrow, so I thought I'd better give you a call since I've been listening to you all around the world.
All around the world. So this is just the latest of your peregrinations, is it?
It is. It's the final one, which is good. But, yeah, we're basically a little petrol bowser up here in the middle of the Gulf, Ian, and the oil comes down from the highlands, and we give it to marine tankers here, and they sail around the world and distribute the oil.
I see. So, Stevie, what's it like? Where is the Gulf of Papua?
Okay, so I'm about 300 miles north of Cape York and about 180 miles northwest of Port Moresby. So I'm in that big bight up in the tip there, and we're in shallow water here. And I've got a POB, people on board, of about 21. Presently at the moment we've got about 13. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice little tight community, and we do offtake tankers here, 650,000 barrels at a time. And this asset's a very quiet one, not too many people know, but we've done 1,063 offtakes.
Yeah, well, that's your jargon, offtakes. We're just trying to get that on board. but tell me, are you on land or are you on a ship?
No, I'm on a platform, so like an oil rig platform that's drilled into the seabed floor.
Uh-huh. And that's where you live and stay, or what do you do?
That's it. 28 days on, 28 days off, Ian. So I'm on my final day tomorrow, which is, I'm looking forward to it.
And I imagine on your days off, you sit with your legs dangling over the side and go fishing. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, it's you're not allowed to fish in Australian waters, but I've brought it in up here. It's a cultural experience here for our local national, so I let them fish here. And they do catch some good fish, and we do send it ashore to the local communities, yeah.
So what sort of fish? You don't like catch a flathead or a brim there, do you? What do you catch?
No, there's big finger mark here, which is a very nice eating fish, and there's some red emperor and some coral trout below us. So, yeah, some good eating fish, and then, of course, there's mackerel that swim around as well.
Holy mackerel. Yeah.
Yeah, holy mackerel.
Holy mackerel. and, well, that's what somebody said. Could you go and get the... They said, could you go and get the milk? And they said, no, mackerel, get it? Mackerel. Get it? He said.
That's it.
Yeah. Stevie, where else around the world have you worked?
Worked in Vietnam and in China and west coast of Western Australia. So usually around the Asian areas is the most. But I've loved it up here, Ian. I've been here for 8.5 years, and this is the best place I've been.
Have you been up the Fly?
Yes, went up there and also went up some of the other rivers. I actually was looking at a fishing trip to bring my son up here, but unfortunately it was all booked out. But, yeah, there's some beautiful river systems here. Unfortunately enough, when we had the COVID explosion and everything else and we lost choppers up here, we couldn't use them because of the risk of COVID. So we were going up and down in a boat up and down the river here. And it's a magnificent place.
It's a mighty river. I've never been to PNG and I may not get there. But the Fly River is just an amazing waterway, isn't it? Just
it is. The amount of fresh water that comes out of Papua New Guinea is phenomenal. I mean, I'm quite a long way offshore. I can just see the shore, and I have fresh water passing me. So the amount of water that's coming out of the country is amazing. Yeah.
So Stevie, what are you going to do with yourself now that you going back to Australia and living there, or what?
Yes, going back to Australia. I live on the sunny coast, and my wife's put up with this for about 30 years, so she's looking forward to seeing me a little bit more than 28 days at a time.
Oh, that'll wear off quick.
yeah, after about 30 days, she'll wonder what I'm still doing there.
Yeah, exactly. She'll have to find a job for you. She'll have to find something for you to do. Stevie, yeah, look, it's an amazing experience. Most of us who are listening to you this morning, will never get to do that. How far offshore did you say?
Yeah, I'm just on the horizon, basically, so I'm about 30 miles offshore, and I can just see the ridges on a good day when there's no rain and no clouds. But what I'll do at the end, I've got some great photos up that delta, and I'll flick a few through to you on email, yeah.
And your final day is when? Is this your final stint today, is it?
Yeah, tomorrow I chop her off, and I'll overnight up in the Highlands, and then I'll catch a fixed wing back to Brisbane on Tuesday, yeah.
It's like another world. And my mate goes fishing off the coast, 30 k's out there, and he says it's a wilderness out here, mate.
Yeah.
But when you say the Highlands, that's a wilderness too for most of us. We'll never see. It's just another world, isn't it?
It is. It's a beautiful country, Ian, and there's a lot to see up here. And if you are into fishing and everything else, it's a wonderful spot to bring up and do fishing trips. But it's the people are wonderful, and I've had a fantastic 8.5 years here. I couldn't ask for anything better.
Steve, when we come up to the sunny coast to do a program, hopefully this year you'll be back home and might give you opportunity for your wife to get rid of you, and you send us down to our outside broadcast, we can have a yarn.
I'll definitely catch up with you, Ian, that's for sure. And what a fantastic show. And as I said earlier, I've listened to you on shortwave all around the world when I was a junior marine engineer. And we'd all stop work on a Sunday and listen and get back to work. But now, of course, the internet and everything makes it a lot easier.
Stevie, great to talk to you. Keep in touch. Thanks.
Will do, Ian, and all the best. And everyone, have a great day.
So thanks, mate. Judith's in Melbourne. Morning, Judith.
Good morning. I'm ringing up listening to all these exotic places, and I work in Braeside Park, which is 294-hectare metropolitan park. And for the people around us, surrounded by suburbia, it's a little oasis too. It's... People think they'd get lost in the bush here because it is a bushland reserve. But what I'm ringing you up for is this was where the famous Farlap trained before the 1930 Melbourne Cup, which he won. Mm. And if we look at the southern hemisphere where we celebrate thoroughbreds horses on the 1st of August, we decided finally to do a goal we've been setting for 30 years to actually celebrate our park and Farlap on the 1st of August. So we're having a celebration and unveiling a sculpture and having music and cake, and we've painted panels of the park and how it's developed from the Karam Karam Swamp to the Metropolitan Park today, and it's had a really checkered history. And we worked with the Dingley Men's Shed, the Dingley Village Historical Society, the U3A, some schools, and it's been about almost a year and a half concentrated work to get to this day, and I hope the weather's going to be great.
On the 1st of August, Judith, what's the name of the park again for everyone around Australia? It's the...
Braeside Park.
Braeside Park.
It was once the part of the big Karam Karam Swamp, which went right down the coast of Melbourne and out. And then it became, you know, usual thing, in comes the cattle and they drain it. Then we do our market gardening. Then it became a horse training track with a magnificent track, which has been restored. So not the two tracks, but it's been restored. And it has a dam where the horses used to swim, which we call Farlap Swimming Pool. And it had a beautiful stable, absolutely gorgeous stable. But it was burnt down, I don't know how, probably not very good circumstances, in the 1980s. But the track remains, and some of the old signposts around are still there, and the remnants of the stable are still there. So we're going to do a walk on his real birthday, which is the 4th of October, but we're going to have this celebration on the birthday of all the southern
horses.
Hemisphere horses' birthday.
And that's a Saturday, is it? Saturday the 1st of August.
Saturday the 1st. It's about 13 days, and I'm counting every one of them.
Oh, I bet you are.
Trying to get ready.
Oh, look, I'd love to be there. Judith, good luck with that. And there'll be a sculpt of Farlap?
We've done a sculpture that we're putting on the Farlap track, and we've painted panels on the old cypress stumps, which are about close to 100 years old and had to be cut. So we decided to paint panels of the history of Braeside Park. So we start with the swamp, and then we go through the steps, the sewage farm, which was the last thing before the Metropolitan Pack. So we worked with the lovely Dingley Village Men's Shed.
Uh-huh.
I convinced them that they might like to paint the panels and do it for me.
I bet they did. Listen, where in Melbourne is Braeside Park for people who've been to Melbourne but don't know it intimately like you do?
It's in the southeast, but most people probably know Dandenong or Mentone, and we're sort of up from Mentone, down from Dandenong. Not the ranges, but Dandenong, the actual city of Greater Dandenong.
Riding through the Dandenong ranges. Yeah, all right. Yeah. So that's where it is, Braeside Park, and Saturday the 1st of August. Be a big day, Judith.
It will be a big day.
What's it like in Melbourne this morning?
It's chilly. It's quite cold. I think it was probably three or four. It'll be fog over in Braeside Park because it's a big open space, and I hope all the little bunny rabbits are getting their little toes frozen because they're damn nuisances.
Good on you, Judith.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Rob, where are you, Rob?
I'm just outside of Brisbane, just heading towards Brisbane from Warwick. So I've headed all the way from Victoria, country Victoria, through New South Wales and into coming into Brisbane.
What for?
Yeah, I'm just going to see a mate who I haven't caught up with for 20 years. His parents are my godparents, and he's racing in the World Championship BMX World Championships in Brisbane this week. So I'm just heading there for 4 days to go and see him and support him.
You're a good mate, aren't you?
I grew up with him, and his parents are my godparents. So I thought no one else is going for him. He's only in the he's racing in the not the elite category. It's like the amateur one, but in his age group, 40 plus year olds, my age. So yeah, I'm going to support him and his daughter. His daughter's racing as well. But everyone's coming from all over the world to race in its BMX Worlds.
And where are they on, Rob, the BMX Worlds? Where are they?
It's at the Brisbane International Velodrome in Brisbane. It's at the back of the Velodrome near the BMX track. And it started Friday, and it goes till, I think, next weekend. So it's about a week-long event, and there's pros, juniors, and amateur class events. All age groups are from kids to about 50, I think.
What's your mate's name?
Matthew Scaife. Matt Scaife, and he's he just races in Victoria for a Victorian club down in Melbourne, and
he's got a famous racing name, hasn't he? Mark Scaife's the big hot shot.
Yeah. It's spelled a bit different though. His is a bit different, but I'm not sure how he got back. Like, he got into it, but his daughter's been doing it, so I think he's been doing it for his daughter. So. Yeah, so I'll be good to catch up and meet his daughter. I haven't met his daughter yet since he's had his daughter. So I sort of disconnected from him because we went our own separate ways, as you do in life.
You should do.
And then we come back together, and it's been a good 20 years. And I thought, if I don't do this, I'm not going to get the chance to do it. You know,
you're just escaping from the cold, Rob. Come on, get a come on. well, there'll be a big crowd there at the Brisbane International, won't there? The velodrome, and it's an Olympic sport, isn't it? BMX, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's an Olympic sport. We've got there's Olympians who are racing in it. I think a couple Australian Olympians, and I think the Australians have got all up about 1,000 competitors. That's a fairly big thing.
I'll say it sounds big. Good on you, Robbie. Good luck. I hope your friend greets you and gives you a good handshake. And after 20 years, it'll be good.
Yeah, thank you.
See you, mate.
Thanks, bye.
Bye. G'day, this is Macca. Hello.
Hello. Good morning, Macca.
What's happening? What's your name?
My name is Daryl.
Mm-hmm. Tell me.
Where the lady that spoke to you before 7 o'clock was ringing from Braeside Park. Pardon me.
Yep.
And which is where I'm at the moment. We're a running group that's we're meeting at Braeside. We meet at a different place every week, and we're meeting at Braeside Park this morning. So it prompted me to give you a call.
So you're a runner, Daryl, is it?
Well, I'm a former runner. There's a group of about 15 of us. Some are runners, some are bike riders, and some are now walkers.
Mm-hmm.
We've been going for about over 50 years. So if you do the maths, we're into our 70s and our 80s now, but we're still meeting. And I'm just sitting here waiting. We start at 7:30 and go till about 9 o'clock and have coffee afterwards.
Well, sounds like a nice way to spend the morning. Daryl, you live at Braeside Park, do you, or do you meet there?
No, we meet somewhere different every week. This week we're meeting at Braeside Park,
mm-hmm.
and we've been going for over 50 years. So we're a group that are very patient and tolerant.
Well, that's what you need in this world that we live in, Daz.
It is. But we love us. We call ourselves the Wattle Park Fitness Group, and we originally started in Wattle Park. And it would have been back at 1972 is when the group started, and we're still going. I started there about 75. But we started there after the some of the Melbourne Football Club players used to have a Sunday morning group as a sort of a warm down after the Saturday game. There's a guy called Laurie Prosser. Who may even be listening now in Ballarat.
You may be.
He's the one who initiated the group, and we've been going ever since.
Daryl, what do you do, or what did you do for a gig?
Well, I retired 20 years ago. I was a policeman.
Oh, right. Okay. And what do you think of the work that policemen have to do now? Because it's interesting, isn't it? When I first started doing this program, which was a while ago, And one of the things, we'd get little community announcements sent in, and invariably hospitals, because you've got to, if you go back 40 years or 30 years, people didn't have, everyone seems to have money today, if you know what I mean. Whereas when you grew up, Daryl, and I grew up, if you had a few bob, you were sort of lucky, you know what I mean? But now everyone's got money. But anyway, hospitals used to send us little community announcements. And this, to me, exemplifies the difference between, say, 1970, 1980, and 40 years ago and now, and the times we live in now, because they would send me a little community announcement and say, Ian, could you please publicise an amnesty on crutches and bedpans in the hospital, because they wanted them returned. And now, 40 years later, we have an amnesty on machetes. So that really says to me...
It says a lot.
It says a lot, doesn't it? And you're you're an ex-policeman.
Very ex, yes.
And were you in... How long were you a policeman for, Daryl?
Oh, about 30 years.
Uh-huh. And you retired, or you just said, that's enough for me, I'm going to go running or whatever?
Well, as I say, I retired from full-time policing 20 years ago, 20 years ago this year. I was last working on the Commonwealth Games in Melbourne.
And you would have had the Commonwealth Games this year, except you couldn't afford it.
That's another story.
Oh, God, give me a break. They might have called you back as a community person, like they did with the Sydney Olympics, where people could volunteer their time. And because your experience, Daryl, I reckon, would be, when you're little, all the cops used to look old. When you're young, they all look old, and now they all look young. But your experience, Daryl, should be called on, because I think old people are old, but they're older people. I mean, not being, but yeah, you've got
old,
experience.
Old and wise. Is that what you're saying? Old and wise.
You've got experience, Daryl. You've got experience. Yes. So yeah. Anyway, all right. Well, nice to talk to you, Daryl.
Thank you, Macca. It's good to speak. But as I say, we listen to you every Sunday morning. So I thought I'd give you a buzz.
Yeah, and where will you be next Sunday? Who knows?
Oh, we've got a program. We have a different place every Sunday. So we have 50 different places every year.
Well, it keeps it interesting, mate.
That's 50 different coffee shops we go to. If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
People invariably say, where are we having coffee today? Not where are we running, where are we having coffee?
Good on you, Daryl.
All right. Thanks, Macca.
G'day, this is Macca.
Yeah. Good morning, Macca.
Yes.
Yeah, it's Scott here. I'm ringing from Malanda on the Atherton Tableland.
Yeah, it's lovely up there, Scott, this morning. A bit cool, I'd say. Fresh, nice, lovely.
Yeah, it is. It's very nice. Our rain stopped about last Tuesday. We up until then, we had about 6 weeks of continual drizzle.
Oh, dear. That's boring.
So it's good to see fine weather.
Mm.
Yeah. But anyway, Mac, I'm ringing up. A couple of weeks ago, I was down in Cairns visiting our family, and coming home about 7 o'clock at night, up past 7, just outside Malanda here, this a light appeared right behind my car, and it followed me for about 2 kilometres, and I was only doing about 80 kilometres, and I thought, why doesn't this person pass? And then all of a sudden, it just disappeared out of the blue. Never saw it. And I'm just mystified to what it was. Yeah.
What, do you think aliens or something like that? Or?
Well, I don't know. It certainly wasn't a vehicle, because the light wasn't bright enough. And it just as quickly as it come, it disappeared, and it followed me for about 2 kilometres right behind the car. It was just like a car sitting right behind me, and I just thought I'd ring up and let you know, yeah.
And it was, but it wasn't a car?
It wasn't a car, no.
But you probably couldn't see in your rear vision because it was it shining directly in your eyes?
No, it wasn't a real bright light. It was just like the moon sort of thing, a soft light. But it was right behind me. It wasn't in the distance.
Has this happened before?
No, I've never experienced
Scotty?
It before. And I thought this is a load of bull, all this stuff. But
UFOs and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, UFOs usually to me are up in the sky, you know, like a flying saucer.
That's right.
But yours is on ground level.
Yeah, well, I thought it was just one light, wasn't two lights. And I thought maybe it's a motorbike, but it was too high and it just disappeared out of the blue as quickly as it come. Yeah, and it followed me for about 2 kilometres. Right.
Well, you've unsettled us all now, Scott. I mean, we're having a lovely morning here and enjoying ourselves and sipping coffee and...
Yeah,
I don't know. So, Scott, you live on the Tablelands, do you?
I do, in Malanda. Yep.
Look, I've got no explanation, Scott, except it could have been...
No, I just thought I'd report it and somebody else might have experienced the
same
thing.
They might have seen it too, exactly. You never know.
Okay, yep.
All right. Well, nice to talk to you, Scott.
Lovely to talk to you too.
If we find anything, or if you find anything, see, it's never happened before. That means to me that it may have been some sort of optical illusion or something like that. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it could have been.
The
moon reflecting in your rear vision mirror,
it was
which
too low
got
to be
you...
the moon, and there was all sort of trees around, so they would have shaded the moon from seeing me, but it was right behind me, like a motorbike following me, you know, a car length behind me, but it was too high to be a motorbike. It was about 5 foot in the air.
Scotty,
no harm done.
No harm done. All right, mate. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
See ya.
Bye.
G'day, this is Macca.
Good morning, Macca. Brett from Northern Victoria. How you going?
All right, Brett, what's happening?
No yellow lights following me this morning, just thick fog.
Mm.
I'm on an AI run, Macca. I'm AIing dairy cows around the countryside this morning. I've got about 6 farms to AI this morning, so cows.
That's artificial insemination, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got to get it right. It's not artificial intelligence, it's artificial insemination.
Exactly.
So and totally different things, Macca.
Yes.
So farmers catch their cows for me after milking, and I've got 6 farms that I go to, starting from 6:30 and finished about 9:30, and AI their cows for them and hopefully get them in calf and create another lactation, and away we go again.
Well, you're the bloke that people need to talk to about AI. You've got it. You've got it under control, Brady, by boy.
Yeah, absolutely. So one arm's warm. You've got to think of that on these cold mornings. It's not really a job you want to bite your fingernails with either.
No, I suppose not. But anyway.
So that's all I'm up to, Mac. I'm just a long-time listener. I grew up in the Flinders Ranges on a sheep station up there for 15 years. So always on a Sunday morning, listen to you while the bacon and eggs were cooking on the barbecue.
No. People always tell me about their breakfast here. We don't eat for 6 hours, but it's not good. Anyway.
No. So the parents sold the station up at the base of Wilpena Pound to our neighbour, Tony Smith. So they've started a bit more of a legacy up there. So I moved back down to Victoria contractor. So I can't spray in the morning because of the dew. So I contract out to an AI company.
Well, Brady, it's nice to know you've got AI on the run, mate.
Yep, absolutely. Righto, Macca, I've got to go because I've got some dates with some bovines waiting for me at the gate here.
All right, good on you, Brett. Thank you.
Thanks, Macca.
See ya.
Bye.
G'day, this is Macca.
Hi, Macca. My name is Wendy and I'm calling from Maryborough in Queensland. How are you?
Oh, I'm good, thanks, Wendy.
That's good. Macca, thank you for your show. We listen to you as everybody says. I just wanted to make a comment. There was a gentleman just a couple of calls before who mentioned a yellow light that followed him up north.
Yeah.
I might have got out of sync, but I didn't hear the word min-min, and I just wanted to... I think I've heard you in other conversations on the radio talk about min-min lights.
Yeah. Yeah, we've talked about the min-min light. So, Wendy, what are you saying?
Well, I'm just wondering if that gentleman was actually followed by min-min, I had a wonderful experience, if not a life-saving experience, many, many years ago. I was lost in northern South Australia coming home after caring for my sister. And I came to a fork in the road and obviously didn't listen to directions clearly enough. And as I got to the fork in the road, my car cut out.
Oh, dear.
And to my right, by myself, it was quite nerve-wracking. And by myself, and this light followed me, which I saw but didn't pay any attention to because I was probably a bit frightened being lost. And the minion came to the right-hand side of my car. I got out of my car, walked a couple of feet because my car had cut out to see perhaps if there was smoke or steam coming from underneath the engine or I had a tyre blowout or something. I needed to have a second minion come, and they were to the right-hand side of the steering wheel of my car outside. There was a yellow one and a pale blue, almost ultraviolet. And so I sat in the car and they just sat probably a foot to the right of my right rear vision mirror.
Right.
And I spoke to them.
Mm.
And I just was crying and I said, I'm lost. And so the yellow one went to the left and disappeared completely. And the ultraviolet blue one took me to the right fork in the road and I found my way home. Back to Adelaide.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, Wendy? I find it unbelievable. But while that song was on, I answered the because I answer the phones here and sweep up too when I've got nothing to do. And a lady called Margie said, "Oh, Macca, that's the Min Min lights. They're just on holidays at the moment because the Min Min lights are usually associated with Boolya. Because when I was when I were a younger man." I worked on Big Country for a time on the program called A Big Country. And one of the crews from A Big Country went out searching for the Min Min light. I don't think they found it. See, and if they'd have been doing it now, they could just pop up to the Atherton Tablelands. Where were you, Wendy, when you saw the lights?
Actually, I was north of South Australia. I was actually in the Barossa Valley.
Well, they must have been really on holidays because if they live... If they live in traditionally you're supposed to be Boolya, and the interesting thing about it is because you know art for art's sake and money for Christ's sake, as my dad used to say, meaning that the council in Boolya actually because so many people were going up Boolya Way to look for the Min Min lights and they weren't there because you know it's like the green flash which appears on the horizon for just a momentary. Time you have to be there in the moment. So the council at the time, this might have been in the '70s or eighties, they decided to put up some little faux Min Min lights people say, "Oh, we saw the Min Min light up there, Boolya." Yeah, there, and they were inaccessible on a hill somewhere, so people couldn't get and touch them. Like you didn't touch them, Wend.
No, because when I put my hand out. They appearingly didn't allow me to touch them. Now, can I just tell you something, Macca?
You can.
You don't go to see Min Mins. The Min Mins come to you.
I see. See?
Okay.
Yep.
So I'm not a freeloader, but I can tell you, Slim Dusty used to sleep on our back veranda, and I can tell you, if Slim Dusty says they're real, I'm telling you they're real.
Well, I'm not disagreeing, Wendy. Yeah, it's a pity you didn't have a mobile phone. When was this, Wendy? What time was it?
Look, I'm 67, so I would probably say I was around 20 at the time, maybe even 19.
Long before mobile phones.
Well, the other thing is too, my family were on the Nullarbor, Kangoonya, Sejuna, around that area there, and they will. Any driver who will come in with a dead roo in the back of their ute will tell you, you know, cripes. You know, without the bloody Min Mins, we wouldn't have got here. So, you know, I was born and raised on Min Mins, just simply by tales and having an extraordinary experience. So, and true as I'm here, I can tell you now.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you, Wendy. Good on you. Nice to talk to you. Where are you this morning? You're in Maryborough in Queensland.
Beautiful Maryborough in Queensland. Yes.
Okay.
We moved here 5 years ago from Brisbane.
And you haven't seen a Min light since that time.
You'll have to come here to Maryborough and find out, Macca.
All right.
Please. That'd be nice. We'd love to have you here.
Okay. I'll see you on the first.
Okay, look forward to it.
All right.
First of what?
First opportunity.
Oh.
Yeah. See ya.
See ya, Macca.
See ya. Dick Smith's on the line. Good morning, Dick.
Hi, Macca. How are you?
I'm all right. Have you got a cold or something? Or
No, it's just my voice when it's early in the morning. I'm at Cobar at the moment. Pip and I have been away for about 4 weeks.
Uh-huh.
Drove up through the Armidale area. We wanted to see that before they put these 1,000 wind turbines in and turn it into an industrial area. Then we drove up to Winton and across to Boulia, saw the Min Min lights. They are definitely alien. There's no doubt about that. So that's pretty boring. And
you didn't see the Min Min lights, did you really?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, lots of them all the time. I see them every time I go there. And it's quite simple. They're just aliens. So there's no bother with them at all. They're just aliens. Come from
the world's going crazy. Yeah, okay. Yes. And you saw the Min Mins and then?
Yeah, then across the top of the Simpson Desert to Alice Springs, and then we drove down to Lake Eyre to William Creek, and on the way down, beside the road, there are these incredible bulldozers and machines and everything, and they're putting in two fibre optic cables. One, I'm told, is for Telstra, that's the blue one, and then there's a pink one, which I'm told is Microsoft. They're putting in their own, what we call optical cable, right across Australia by the look of it.
Yeah, the laying optic fibre right across the paddock. It's a call I remember from 20 years ago. And the bloke, they were out on the Nullarbor, or part of the Nullarbor near the road, I think. He said, we're laying optic fibre across the paddock. Right. So now, they're still doing that?
Still doing that. What's our highlight? We're just driving in our camper van, and we got to William Creek. And Mark Sprigg, now we know Reg Sprigg, we know Doug Sprigg of Arkaroola.
Mm.
Well, his son is now the chief pilot with Trevor at William Creek. So they took us up in a little 172 and we flew over Lake Eyre. It's about three quarters full. It's just incredible. Where the Warburton River comes in the north, it looks like where the Amazon goes out into the Atlantic. It's so big.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely fantastic. And so then back down to the South Lake Eyre, which the water comes up very close to the road, but you're not going to believe this. The South Australian politicians have brought in a law that says you're not allowed to go down onto the shore. You're not allowed to paddle in Lake Eyre.
And why is that? Why would that's just a law that we're not asked about, like many laws in Australia?
Yeah, it's something to do with the Aboriginal people declared it was sacred, but I find that really difficult to believe. Years ago, Pip and I, we camped on North Lake Eyre. We went swimming. It was the most beautiful little with our girls. This is on the northern end of Lake Eyre. And I thought when I was swimming there, this is 40 years ago, gee, the Aboriginal people, their kids would have been swimming here for thousands of years. It's such a beautiful place. Well, now what's happened, they've banned it. It's a big fine. And they've put a barbed wire fence in between the lookout and the lake shore. There's a barbed wire fence. Interestingly enough, everyone's objecting to it and ignoring it, climbing through the fence, and I've got photos of people swimming in the lake, so they're just not taking any notice of the new law.
As you know, I've got quite a few books about Lake Eyre, a couple by Roma Del Hunty, The Rumbling Silence of Lake Eyre, which is, you know, she talks about this silence you could hear, even when it's silence, there's some sort of rumble. And anyway, but one of the things she said, and she was there in just before the big flood in 74. 74 was really the big flood. And, of course, as you know, Donald Campbell did his land speed record on the dry salt lake, and it was a dry salt lake. But they said, and Roma said, that Aboriginal people didn't like that area because it was dry and hot. There was no food there. The Aboriginals didn't go there because there was no food. There's no kangaroos and things like that, so there's no hunting there. And also they didn't like it because there's around the rim of it, there was a muddy area which they thought which had trapped some Aboriginal people over the time. So they thought it was bad spirits and we don't go there. So that's what Roma Del Hunty said back in 74 in her book. And who was the other bloke who wrote the book about Lake Eyre? Was Bonython, who was a great walker through all that country. So I don't know. But, you know, if we love laws here in Australia, we love laws, but I'm glad to see people disobeying stupid laws, which is what you need to do when you find a law that is blatantly, but anyway, it might be dangerous, but it's certainly Roma Del Hunty seemed to think that Aboriginal people didn't go there.
Yeah, the difference is, of course, that when the lake is down and dry, there's mud and you could do some damage to it. But when the lake is three quarters full, there are these beautiful little gravel sandy beaches, which is the most magnificent place for young kids to paddle in the water. And I heard that the school at Marie took the kids up and they went paddling in the water. And I said, well, how was that allowed? And it appears that maybe they're Aboriginal kids, so they're allowed. It's just all non-Aboriginal Australians that get fined if they go and paddle in Lake Eyre. And that's just ridiculous. It's not on.
So, Dick, you went to, that was, when were you at Lake Eyre? Last week, was it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 3 or 4 days ago. And the lake is absolutely magnificent. It's got so much water in it. And what we found, the water's running in into South Lake Eyre in Stewart Creek. It's running in. And also it's coming in from the west at the moment. Neil's River is flowing. And so there's still water going in. Cooper's Creek has stopped flowing. That's from the east.
Uh-huh.
But the Warburton River is bringing big lots of water down. So it's something to see. You mentioned Roma Dalhunty. We went, flew over Dalhunty Island. And it, just nearby, there are all these pelicans breeding, thousands of pelicans. Quite incredible.
Yeah, well, it's been I mean, you've been out there before. In fact, I think I flew with you years ago when there was a, not over Lake Eyre, but there was a lot of water out there because there are these rain events that happen, seem to, what, every 10 years or something like that?
Yeah, yeah, no. Look, it's incredible to me and how the pelicans know to get back to the water when the water's coming. No one really knows that. It's quite incredible.
Yeah. Anything else to report, Dick?
Oh, yes. Thousands of goats. We've now driven. We're in Cobar at the moment, and between Wilcannia and Cobar, what you see is just goat after goat after goat. I'd say we saw 2,000 or 3,000 goats, lots of beautiful emus. But look, I suggest to anyone, not too many people are out in the outback at Boolya and at Winton. They said, we haven't got a lot of people because people think they've run out of diesel, which they haven't, or people think the diesel is too expensive, which it isn't. And it's just wonderful to get out in the outback. It's the most wonderful trip we've just done.
And I suppose the goats are proliferating because of the feed everywhere.
Yes, it's so green. Now, look, I can't believe it. It's like driving in an English country garden. And the whole trip, which was basically sort of Sydney, Winton, Boolya, Alice Springs, and then down to William Creek, and then down to Parachilna. It's all green. I've never seen the country like it. It's just absolutely magnificent. And wait for it, wildflowers. Pip's been taking photographs of the most magnificent wildflowers.
Oh, sounds like a wonderful trip. It's best to do it. I mean, it's nice to fly over things, but it's nice to be on the ground, I reckon, Dick.
Definitely. You've got to do both. And as you know, I've done lots of flying over the area in the helicopter, but it's great to be on the ground. We're just having the most wonderful time. Dubbo tonight, and then we'll be back in Sydney.
Well, speaking of industrial areas, between Dubbo and Wellington, apparently, my correspondents have told me that's another area where there's lots and lots of solar farms, lots and lots of wind farms too. Dubbo to Wellington, I think you'll probably see all that too.
Yeah, we're going to see. It's around Birrawa where I used to go as a kid, and the locals there, they just say the whole area has been completely destroyed. It's so sad because it's not going to supply constant thing. And when I mentioned we drove through Armidale where they're going to put up to 1,000 turbines, there wasn't a breath of wind. The day and a half we flew through there, there was no wind. So there'd be no power generation. It's so intermittent.
Dick, nice to talk to you, mate. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks, Macca.
But in my studio this morning, I have a guest. I have a little card here. I think that's one of those free cards that you used to be able to get with Australia Post. I'm not sure. But it says, G'day, Macca and Lee. Crochet Kate here from Albany in WA. House sitting in Sydney for a little while. And Crochet Kate is... Well, that's what she does. She knits and crochets and makes wonderful, lovely things. And I'm pleased to say that Kate Thomas is in my studio this morning, all the way from Albany. G'day, Kate. How are you?
Good morning, Macca. Really well. Thank you for having me.
That's a pleasure. It's nice to see you. It's nice to see people from... Saves me going to Albany, although I want to go to Albany this year. I don't know if I'll get there, but I'd love to go there. So you've been knitting and crocheting for how long, Kate?
Well, pretty much all of my life, really.
Wow.
But... since retirement, I've had more time to put the crochet hook
in the
yarn on the hook.
So it's mostly crochet you do?
Mostly crochet, because it's much easier to carry these small hooks in your bag
than big knitting needles.
Yeah, the big knitting needles.
Yeah.
Just helping out local charities, volunteering.
Making all sorts of what? Shawls and
beanies. For Albany Community Hospice. I actually started doing that when I was working as a nurse on the set of Blueback, which was filmed at Bremer Bay. And as the nurse on set, you were sort of standing around for 14 hours a day waiting for the next injury. Mm-hmm. And what do you do while you're standing around all that time? Watch all that's going on behind the scenes. But I started with the crochet and I made my first beanie. And one of the wonderful assistant directors said, "Who are you making that for?" And I said, "Oh, whoever wants it." And he said, "Can I have that one?" And it was a really multicoloured one. So he put it on and he was my model. And then everyone was going, "Where'd you get that beanie from?" And so I got the orders and over the next 6 weeks made, well, we raised $800 for hospice just from the beanies. They minimum donation of $10, but some people put more and, you know, it was lovely.
Isn't it a wonderful thing? Because we've had lots of ladies here with Michael Kelly from the maritime area, and they're making beanies and getting ladies, and mostly ladies around the place, but some blokes to knitting beanies and things for blokes who are trapped on ships, like I assume in the Straits of Hormuz, although that's pretty warm there, but around the world when COVID was on, they were trapped on boats for sometimes for 18 months, for God's sake, and they weren't even allowed off in port, so they were stuck on the boat, so they were preparing packages with, you know, food and bits and pieces, but mainly beanies, because, you know, you're on a ship and it's cold and through the winter and stuff like that. So that's the marvellous thing about life and humanity, and there should be more of that. It's a great example. You know, when you see a lot of selfishness and awful bastardry going on and people stealing money from, you know, with illegal cigarettes and all these horrible things are going on and nothing seems to be done about it, and yet there's a coterie of lovely people around the world who are helping others by doing simple things like crocheting. Think, oh yeah, big deal. It's the stuff of the
warms
whole community.
Your heart.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
Absolutely.
How's things in Albany?
Oh, things are busy in Albany.
Really?
Of course, this year is the Albany Bicentenary.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so
really?
200th anniversary of WA's first European settlement.
Uh-huh.
And the arrival of the Brig Amity, bringing British settlers to live and make their lives there.
Have you been there all your life?
No, I came.
You're a blow-in.
I'm a blow-in. Went to Albany in 87, so I think I'm sort of classed as a local now. You have to be there for 30 years or something.
Oh, yeah, well, you're nearly 40 years next year for you. Yeah,
that's right. No, I'm from Jersey originally in the Channel Islands.
Oh, really?
And Mum decided we needed to leave this small 45 square mile island in 1968, and we came by ship, arrived in Fremantle, and Fremantle was home for the next 10, 15 years. I did my nursing at Fremantle Hospital. And then,
is it Fremantle or Fremantle? What's the deal?
Well, I've always said Fremantle.
Mm, so have I, but I hear some people say Fremantle.
Yeah. It's a bit like Albany.
It's
Albany.
A bit like Mackay and Mackay and all that sort of stuff, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Castlemaine.
Yes. Well, yes.
It doesn't really matter. So, Kate, you're here, house sitting for a couple of months or
weeks? I got this opportunity to house sit for these lovely people in Darlinghurst, which is just in the next suburb to where my son and his family
just
live.
Just up the road here. Yeah.
I know. I just hopped on the tube this morning and feel like I'm local. And so I'm going to be looking after their Labrador called Barney for
three weeks
while they go off to...
How is Barney anyway? You all right?
Well, I haven't met him yet.
I'm
going for my orientation tomorrow.
Your Barney orientation.
But I imagine over the next 3 weeks I'll be doing lots of walks around the district and introducing him to my grandchildren and keeping him fit and healthy.
Yeah, well, it's nice to see you, and thanks for popping in. How long will you be in Sydney for?
3 weeks.
Yes. And are you still crocheting while you're here?
Crocheting, making these bookmarks for hospice and anyone who wants them, and the little pocket hearts for a 1,000 Heart Project. That's just spreading kindness and compassion.
We need more of that.
We need more of that, that's for sure. One of our Albany Woodle Mills was closed down just in the early 2010, I think, and one of the ladies has put together an exhibition of the Albany Woolen Mills, and she gave me a whole lot of offcuts of the old woolen mill blankets. So I've been making pocket hearts out of Albany woolen
mills. Aren't you a little treasure? They're fantastic.
But, you know, giving someone one of these can change their day, you know, warm them up and make them feel...
Are you giving me this?
You can have that one.
Well,
you
made
can
my
have
day
that.
Too.
There you go. And enjoy your Anzacs.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
My 8-year-old grandson, oh, he's going to be 8 next month, showed me how to use his new gadget that the family got.
Which is?
Oh, a very expensive Thermomix. And I'm not used to making Anzacs in a gadget like that, but we did it his way yesterday. So I want to know if you think they're as good as a normal...
Well, stick around for a while. You can stick around here and watch the Min Min lights, which and will be coming in. We've got a Min Min light on the wall.
Beautiful. And thank you for all you do for Australia, Macca. You're a treasure.
Yes, I am. It's a wonder you can't melt me down and make something out of me. that's Kate. Kate's my guest this morning from Albany. We did a lovely concert in Albany years ago in that lovely, right down in the water, that theatre.
The entertainment centre?
Oh, mate.
Oh,
we had a lovely time with Chockers.
I'm a volley there.
Are you?
I get to go and see all the things that are on there and it's wonderful. It's a beautiful centre, isn't it?
It's lovely, lovely. Want to go back there. Well, Kate's been in the green room, actually, partaking. We've got sumptuous feasts here, which... our managing director puts on for us here on Sunday mornings, and we couldn't get her out of there, but I just wanted, Kate's from Albany, and she's a crochet person, and she's given us some little hearts, and she brought in some lovely Anzac biscuits, but I haven't had a cup of tea yet. I'll have those with my cup of tea, Kate. Welcome again to the program. You were just saying about, because you're crocheting and wool and stuff, that the Albany Mills, there's a museum there, the Albany knitting mills, were they called?
Was it Albany Woolen Mills?
And tell me the story about the Albany Woolen Mills.
Well, Albany Woolen Mills started in 1925, and recently we've had a wonderful exhibition in the town this year in the bicentennial, put together by a girl called Sally Pell. And Sally's a crafter person, extraordinary businesswoman, and along with people like Malcolm Trail and the Albany community, they put together this amazing exhibition, which was run for a month or so, and we're looking at having a permanent exhibition space, which will be announced soon. But one of the interesting facts I learnt about it while I went was not only was it an iconic business that was one of the most significant industrial stories of Australia, that in 1975, 1970, it was really struggling. They used to make iconic blankets, apparel, military uniforms, and employ locals. But 1970, it looked like having to close the doors, and Janet and Robert Holmes, the court, came to the fore and managed to talk the government into letting the loans that they owned go and focus on making carpets. So they saved the business and they ran it for 18 years.
And then it's gone.
And it had to close in 2002. It closed.
I wonder why, I suppose. They were making carpet.
They were making carpets for those last years. But thanks to people like Sally and the Albany community, the history has been saved. And, you know, those little offcuts of those blankets, when Sally put out a call, who's got an Albany woolen mill blanket? She was just inundated with people who got them for wedding presents and still had them in the original packets. And she's got about 200
That works. Stuff you don't hang on the wall. Maybe they didn't want to use them all.
They used to make tartans for skirts and they had a pipe band. And it's an amazing story. They've got a Facebook page called Albany Woolen Mills and the exhibition's called Connecting Threads. It's just another interesting story from
Albany. I'll have to see it when I come over. Because Janet and Robert's son listen here every Sunday morning, young Simon.
Yes.
He'd be listening this morning. He's a great fan of the program.
Sally went up and interviewed Janet and she said she had a cup of tea with Janet. She's the most down-to-earth, lovely lady. And she ordered one of a woolen mill blanket duffel coat made and ordered 12 bags for all her grandchildren. So she's a great supporter of the woolen mill project.
All right. Well, lovely to talk to you, and thanks for coming in. And, yeah, you can stop in the green room on the way out and just have another piece of watermelon or whatever. See you in Albany.
Thank you, Mac. Kate Thomas. All the best.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Thank you very much. Bye. This is the All Over News. This is the All Over News, and almost exactly 32 years ago, July 94, this phone call.
Yeah, hello, Ian. Robin Leach here in Kayleen.
Yes, Robin.
I was listening to your program a bit ago, and I was interested in getting your frequency for the shortwave for Canada, because I'm returning back to Edmonton very shortly. But more than that, I'm very keen on spiders. And I work on spiders, and I'm going to be making a key to the Australian families and subfamilies of spiders. And then this is going to be available for a lot of people in Australia after I get it made.
I see. And how long have you been working on those, Robin?
Over since I was a little caterpillar, a little tiny kid. No, I've been working on spiders since I was an undergraduate at the University of British Columbia. And now I'm working on them full-time, whenever I can at least, between teaching jobs.
Here in Australia?
Well, I'm not so much teaching down here. I'm tied in with the CSIRO here at Black Mountain, Canberra.
And that's where Kayleen is?
Kayleen is one of the suburbs of Canberra, K-A-L-E-E-N.
Yep.
I go down there whenever I can, and I do something with their spiders, and I come back, and I do some more here, because I got a microscope at home.
Spiders must be under threat like so many other native species.
Some of them are, and that's because we keep on building in the areas where these creatures live. We find them drowning in our pools. Like, I get lots of male funnel web spiders here. They get sent to me, and people have retrieved them from their swimming pool. And they find them in there, they leave them in there for a day or two till they know they're drowned, then they take them out, then they put them in alcohol, then they fire them up to me.
Amazing things, little spiders.
Yes, they are. You got some very deadly ones here. The funnel web and all its relatives, and the redback, of course. Quite poisonous.
You're going back to Canada soon.
Yes. I don't know if I'll try to give you one of these calls back, though. Kind of expensive from Canada.
Now, you said you're preparing a key, which will mean what?
A key is a tool that allows you, if you have a specimen in front of you and presumably a microscope or something, that you can use these little words. It'll say something like large and hairy, small and not hairy, and you just keep on going, a sort of a yes or no kind of thing, until you come out eventually to a point and it says a family such and such or a species such and such. That's a key. It helps you for identification.
Everything's got a place, hasn't it?
You betcha.
And spiders eat little nasty things that prey on people's crops and all those sorts of things, don't they? Mites and all that sort of stuff.
Spiders don't. No, spiders are the creatures that kill all the things that prey on crops. No spider eats anything in the way of a crop.
No, that's what I meant. They kill things that eat the crops.
Yeah, well, if you figure that there might be as many as 1.5 to, say, 3 million spiders per hectare in a normal field area where the grass might be, say, a half meter high with bits and pieces of bush and a few trees. And each of those spiders, on average, has to have about an insect a day to eat. That's 1.5 million to, say, 3 million insects that are disappearing every day. You don't need bug spray and all the rest of these things. You've got spiders that do it.
Exactly.
It's so interesting to go back through our back pages. That was Robin Leach, entomologist, arachnologist, prolific author of books about language and puns, all sorts of things. Sadly, Robin passed away in 2016 because I found that little interview and I thought, I'm going to ring him and see what's happening in the world of insects and spiders, etc. Our back pages are full of little gems just like that one. And I don't know what the result of Robin Leach's spider key was. Someone at the CSIRO might know. But I do believe, and many confirm this, that our insects and spiders, all the wonderful aspects of the natural life, are in decline, serious decline, a result of too much sprays in the house, in the garden, and the infilling of our suburbs. All house, no garden. This is the All Over News, and renewables and environment are always in the news. This from John Richards. He says, weed warriors are very commendable, Ian. We were talking about weeds and weeding some weeks ago. But out here in the central west of New South Wales, they're cutting swathes through bushland, clearing roadside timber breaks, transmission line corridors. Bathurst burrs will be rampant. He's talking about areas like Coolar, Dunedoo, Cassilis, Gulgong, etc., etc. From Victoria, from Beth Wortman, I'm writing from Kelly Country about a proposed industrial solar and battery installation, the Nioka Solar Farm, planned directly opposite the heritage-listed Ellen Kelly Homestead site. Peter Carey says, Peter Carey, Booker Prize winner, on a day when London is boiling, there's no doubt in my mind that renewable energy is essential to our survival, says Peter Carey, but I cannot see why Greta should pay the price for the excesses of the energy-hungry cities. And Amanda Moore has sent a heartfelt poem about the 180 wind turbines proposed for the Herries Range area, which is around Toowoomba. This from Rolando de Michelle. He says, Ian, for some time I've thought, what has the naming of the various full moons in other countries or continents got to do with Australia? Nothing really. So why don't we get our own names for these full moons? Here is a list more appropriate to our continent. I presented these to the Sutherland Astronomical Society at our recent AGM, and they were accepted as our official 13 Aussie moons. Firstly, January, I call it the Irukandji moon. Irukandji, a small and extremely venomous box jellyfish with long tentacles. The Irukandji is included in the list to help make people aware of the risk and danger associated with these small creatures, particularly swimming in tropical waters. The full moon in February becomes the cyclone moon. While their strongest effects are concentrated in the northern parts of Australia, accompanying heavy rains and strong winds, they can be felt for hundreds of k's south of their paths. March becomes the vintage moon because March is the season of mists and mellow fruitfulness when the vintage comes on. Hence, March becomes the vintage moon. April, the Kimberley moon. Kimberley moon pays homage to the time each year when conditions are right to observe the phenomenon known as the staircase to the moon. This happens when a full moon rises over tidal mudflats in the Kimberley during an extremely low tide. This gives the impression of the rippling water forming steps to the moon. May becomes the dingo moon. Dingoes, our largest predator, helping to maintain the balance of populations of kangaroos, feral animals, and imported species such as cats and foxes. And June, the full moon in June. What would the naming of full moons be without an astronomical association? Most appropriate is the Southern Cross, Crux, C-R-U-X, which is woven into our identity, navigation, history and cultural heritage. July becomes the Idiakara moon. Idiakara region in South Australia is one of the most important paleontological sites on the planet. Here, the oldest complex life forms ever discovered on Earth offer a rare look into biological evolution long before the Cambrian explosion. August, the Eromanga moon. Many Australians are aware of the Eromanga inland sea that covered much of Queensland, South Australia, the Territory and New South Wales about 140 million years ago. Today, this sedimentary basin hosts one of Australia's most important onshore petroleum and gas fields, feeding not only the Moomba processing plant, but a small refinery in the township of Eromanga. Hence, August is the Eromanga moon. September is the magpie moon, one of our most recognisable and widespread native birds, and are a wonder to listen to when two or more start to sing together. October, the wildflower moon. They are uniquely suited to many regions of the country, the wildflowers, but Western Australia is considered as the wildflower capital of the world, and October is a great time to see them. November, the kangaroo moon. While kangaroos breed all year round, the predominant season is in spring and summer, when climatic conditions favour the young survival. Thus, naming a kangaroo moon associated with this time of year is reasonable. And the full moon in December, we call the coral spawn moon. Australia is home to the largest and most spectacular mass coral spawning event on the planet, on the Great Barrier Reef. This happens annually after the full moon in November. The exact nights when this occurs depends on the lunar cycle. A world-class event like this deserves naming a full moon in honour of it. And for the month in which there are two full moons, says Rolando, which happens every year, the second full moon of that month will be called the Bustard Moon. The Australian bustard is a distinct species found only in Australia and southern New Guinea. It's seen across most of the continent, but low in numbers in the southeast of the country. While travelling along open country, you may suddenly come across one popping its head above some tall grass at any time. This is a bit like the second full moon of the month. It can occur in any month of the year except February because the lunar cycle is 29.5 days long. So appropriate to give the second full moon of a month the title the Bustard Moon. Mark's near Newcastle. Morning, Mark.
G'day, Macca. How are you?
I'm fabulous, mate. What's happening?
Well, that was a really interesting call from Steve, ballooning over Lake Eyre.
Mm.
I was there a couple of years ago. It's a fantastic area. And beyond Lake Eyre is the Anna Creek Station, which is the biggest cattle station in the world.
Exactly. Yep.
6 million square kilometres, I think.
Yes, and it's probably looking fantastic at the moment because there's been a lot of rain up around there.
Yeah, exactly. And William Creek, where you drop down, there is a wonderful little outback town. I've been there a few times by road and by plane. So have you been out there?
Oh, well, I have. I haven't been on Anna Creek. I've been in Newcastle Waters in a few places and VRD. But no, I just go there because I'm doing something and then I'm shoot through, Marky. But what are you doing this morning? Where are you? What are you on the road or what are you doing?
So I'm heading up to Byron. You remember we met up at Byron about a year ago?
Oh, I think I do, yes. And you're going up there to a bit of R&R, I suppose, are you?
Well, half and half. I'm just about to start a big rebuild of my house at Wattigo's.
Wow.
That'll take 18 months. And in between...
Come on. Is she there?
And,
yeah, go on. Sorry.
You know, you're always worried about the sharks. Well, we've got a drone operator that the surf club provides that is on duty from dawn till dusk. And if you talk to him, he'll show you on his screen there, you know, there's sharks following you on on the ocean swim.
Oh, I'd love to. So, yeah, I'd love to know that. Yes, there's a big white following you. That's great, isn't it? Great news.
Exactly.
But if you're over at Tallow Beach, no such luck, eh?
Well, Tallows is really scary because the big bait balls come into Tallows and then there are hundreds of sharks. And people stand knee-deep in the water there watching them all, the sharks, you know, going for the bait balls. It's quite fascinating.
I find the world's amazing. I find it amazing, Mark. But do you go swimming at Byron Bay?
Yep, every morning I meet up with all my swimming cohort, who are all, I think we have an average age of about 70, and... Mm. We meet at the club and then we walk up to the pass and swim back to the wreck. So, and then we all go and have coffee.
Ah, yes. Good luck to you, mate. That sounds a lovely thing to do. But my mate Jono, who's recently passed, he used to swim there. But after the shark attack, there was an attack at Byron, I don't know, a couple of years ago, was it? I don't know, I can't remember.
I think it was 2014.
Yeah, really, was it then? And that was only it was only about 30 metres off the beach, wasn't it, I think?
That's right. It was at Clark's Beach, and that was a fatal attack.
Yeah, and but Jono said that the next shark that gets me will have gravel rash because he swam very close to the shore.
Yeah, a lot of them do. It's pretty shallow. But there's plenty of whales out there and plenty of dolphins, and when there's dolphins, there's less likelihood of sharks. But it's a wonderful area, you know, a real nature reserve up there of marine life.
But I'll tell you this, Mark, for nothing, and I've been told by many people, including Nat Young, the famous surfer I spoke, he rang here some, I don't know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago. But when you have whales, you'll have sharks. And now that there are, well, I think over 40,000 whales, and some of them will die as they head up and down the coast because that's the nature of life. And sharks love to prey on dead whale carcasses, whether they be young whales or old whales. And that's one of the reasons, just one of the reasons why there's more sharks around. So sharks and whales go together, and they always have. It's a natural thing. So when you're thinking about that, you think about it's lovely to see the whales, but where there are whales, there are sharks. It's always been the way and always will be. And the more whales we have, the more sharks we'll have. There you go.
Well, that's nature, and that's the whale migration, and I guess the sharks are following them, and we've just had a couple of instances of whales washing up on the beach.
Oh dear!
Both north of Sydney and also up in Byron,
and they go up the west coast too. The same thing happens. All right, Mark. Good on you. Thank you.
Okay. Good on you. Okay. Thanks, Macca.
Bye. G'day. This is Macca.
Oh, hello, Macca. It's Eileen from Brisbane.
Hi, Eileen.
I'm rung to talk about the film, The Odyssey.
Oh, right, yes. Well, I met some kids in the street the other day, and one of them yelled out to me, and she said, love your radio show. and I couldn't believe it. And I turned around, and there was these youngsters, you know, barely 20. Probably 25, actually. And they were off to see the Odyssey. And I said, what's the Odyssey? She said to me, she said, you're kidding, aren't you? Because I thought it was a, you know, I thought it was some, you know, function or a rock and roll band, or do they have, still have rock and roll bands? I didn't know what. And she said, no, don't you know the Odyssey? I said, well, the only Odyssey I know is, you know, the Iliad and the Odyssey. And but was yeah. Oh, she said, yeah, that's it. We're going to see the film. So and so you went and saw it. What's the deal, Eileen?
Very good. It is long.
I know.
So it's 3 hours.
180 minutes.
Yeah, but my husband's here with me too, and he liked The Return, which was about Odysseus.
Same thing.
Ralph Fiennes was in it quite a few years back. But
2024.
Oh, 2024. Sorry. Yeah. Anyway, but no. The main part that I really liked was the music, the score.
Uh huh. But it's all about those Greek blokes, isn't it? Ulysses and Neptune. Yes, not Neptune.
Exactly.
And all that, and they said, are you going to go and see it? I said, no, I'm going to wait for the musical. which is what I always say.
I had read a critique before that, and they mentioned the language, and one thing that really stood out my mind was they were talking about his dad. He said, my dad, which really should have been my father, at least.
Exactly. A bit of poetic license, of course. You know, and it's funny, isn't it? Because here were these six or seven kids, and they would be 25, I'd say 25, 26. And Edie, if you're listening, please ring Edie or Mo or Millie. There were some other names there, but they went to see it. So, and I hadn't, because I don't follow films. I mean, I've given up on Hollywood and stuff like that. Is it an American movie or English or what?
I think it's American. Anne Hathaway stars in it too as Odysseus's wife that he leaves for 20 years. But I thought, as I said, the score I thought was very good, and one part where they're passing the rocks with the sirens and his crew, and they put wax in their ears, and he's strapped to the mask and he's listening to it all. And but it sounded like... You had wax, it had that effect of the sound being blocked out. You didn't hear them wailing, the sirens.
Isn't it amazing how kids, especially, well, everybody's going to see it, they're into, you know, Homer and the Iliad and the Odyssey. I mean, it's just, whereas if you hit them with the Odyssey or the Iliad at school, they go, oh, we had to read the bloody, oh, God, it went on for ages. And No, it comes from Hollywood, and it's, you know, sex and drugs and rock and roll and the journeys, and, you know, it looks this. But if you'd have been back there, you'd say, God, no, where's my mobile phone? We haven't got anything. No, can I get a coffee? They're embracing this time when they would have all, and we all would have hated to be there, if you know what I mean, getting strapped to the mask.
I think it's wonderful that they... want to see it, you know.
I think it is too. I think it's one. They were lovely kids. Lovely kids.
Yeah.
So we had a lovely time. And so you'd give it a, what, 4 stars, 3 stars out of 5?
I'll just confer with my husband. What do you think? 4, how many stars out of 5?
3.5.
I think
4.
I'd say 4.
4.
Whereas The Return, my husband still says 5 stars if you watch that.
I wonder if they're going to do the Iliad.
I don't know.
The refrain from spitting, the Canterbury Tales. Well, they've done the Canterbury Tales, haven't they? And all those things that go on and on and on forever. Eileen, how's things in Brisbane?
Very nice.
You didn't go to the Inter-Dominion last night, did you?
No, I'm not into racing, but no, it's a nice sunny day. We've had showers. We've had quite a wet start to the year, and we've had a few days of beautiful winter weather, but we've had some rain coming and pretty wild seas out there too.
Well, the Odyssey will be the big deal. I've sort of given away Hollywood. I think it's daggy when you watch the and I have to watch it because we're here at the ABC. We're made to watch the Academy Awards. We have to. It's part of it's a statement of duties, and it's so woke and pathetic that. But anyway, it's. Sounds like it's maybe worth seeing. Maybe we take our copy of Homer's Iliad and Odyssey into the theatre with us. Or read it before we go.
Wait till it comes on the TV and you can have a break halfway through.
Or indeed, as I said to the youngsters, wait for the musical.
Oh, the musical.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Anyway, we love listening to you. I love listening to you, Macca, on a Sunday
well,
morning.
Well, so did young Edie, and she's only 25.
I'm wrong.
Oh, is it? Well, it's nice to talk to you. Yes. What's your husband's name?
Ross Rosario.
It's nice to talk to you, Ross, too.
Yeah, thanks, Macca.
Okay. Good on you both. See ya.
Thank you. All the best. Bye.
G'day, this is Macca.
It's Stuart Macca from Burralong, just outside of Armidale. How are you going?
Good, thanks, Stu.
Good, mate. I'm just ringing. We've had some, the Burralong community's had some good news this week. Just on Wednesday, Squadron Energy were developing a 71 turbine wind farm 15 kilometres west of Armidale, and just this week they've withdrawn from the project. So,
wonder why that is.
I think it's community opposition played a big part in it, Mac. We've got 180 members of our local action group. We've been dealing with Squadron for 4 years, and there was just a lot of people impacted, you know, a lot of small farms, a lot of lifestyle blocks, you know, so close to Armidale.
Mm.
And I think just the community opposition, I think they said in their statement that they want to move on to other projects that are more advanced and have... you know, better community relations, you know. So I think that's played a big part in it,
I think there's a lot of opposition around the place, mostly in Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria, I think. Look, I don't know, but I just get lots of emails here and I can't do them all the time. And you know, one of the things I mentioned, I think, in the All Over News was somewhere in the – was the Herries Range, I think, up in Toowoomba, and then there was another one for 180 wind farms somewhere else and solar farms. And I don't know, it's a great change for the people who have to live in those areas, for all of a sudden all this happens. And I can understand the concern, but
in the New England region, Macca, like there's, you know, like I think Dick Smith was on earlier, you know, like there's tens of thousands of acres of solar farms and, you know, 1,000 turbines or something ridiculous, you know. Like, it just doesn't fit up in the New England. It's just a lot of lifestyle blocks. Essentially, it's just too many people, you know, and the government seems to be pushing on with it. They don't seem to be prepared to listen to people. They just want to build this, you know, 2 500 kV transmission lines from Armidale to Bayswater. And the projects just aren't here, and the opposition's just growing all the time. It's just getting worse and worse, you know. I just don't know why the government wants to push on.
Well, it's not for me to say, but we all have our own reasons for what's going on. But, Stuart, I suppose for the people of Burralong, how far's Burralong's an area, what, just outside Armidale, is it?
Yeah, it's only about 12, 15 kilometres from Armidale, but all the way out to where the turbines were, there's little, you know, 50, 100-acre lifestyle blocks.
Mm.
And that's why there's so many people impacted, you know. So it just doesn't fit. It just didn't fit in this area, you know.
Well, nice to talk to you, Stuart. It's cool there this morning. Where are you this morning? You're in...
Yeah, I'm at Burralong, but probably more towards Gyre. But yeah, it is. It's a real ordinary day, actually. Windy and misty and cold.
Isn't that a great description of a day? That's harsh, real ordinary. I asked somebody what's like, oh, it's a soft morning here. That's because you're used to all the usual words that you get, you know, oh, it's hot, cold, you know, cold, what's freezing, but yeah, ordinary, yeah.
I think that
says a lot, doesn't it? One word like that, it says a lot. You think, wow,
really... we're used to it up here at Gyre, though, mate. It gets pretty cold here.
Used to the ordinary, yeah.
Yep.
Good on you, Stuart. Great to talk to you, mate.
Thanks, mate.
See ya. Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.